Welcome to This Is Calm and It's Doctor. I'm your host, Tanner.
And I'm Monica, and this is a Criminal Minds podcast. I almost said a true crime podcast.
So this is episode 10, The Popular Kids. It's directed by Andy Wolk. Writers are Jeff Davis, Edward Allen Bernero, and Andrew Wilder. It's starring Mandy Patinkin, Thomas Gibson, Lola Glaudini, Shamar Moore, AJ Cook, Matthew Gray Gubler, and Kirsten Vang's Ness. And I actually wrote down quite a few of the guest stars because it just felt like, you know, they played a pretty big role. Mm-hmm. Sorry in advance for any noises. I was at work for 12 hours, so my dog's a maniac from lack of attention. Matt Bennett played Adam Lloyd. Michael McGrady plays Sheriff John Bridges. Aaron Paul, plays Mike Zizzo. Will Rothar plays Corey Bridges. Clay Wilcox plays Henry Dent. And Ellen Woglum plays Cherish Hansen. And I know you have some fun facts about what they were in.
First of all, when I saw his name was Matt Bennett, I was like, not from Victorious.
I knew that name sounded familiar. He was the, he had curly hair?
He was the one with the puppet.
Yes, yes.
Or the ventriloquist doll. Sure. So, Corey Bridges, or Will Rothar, I want to say Rothgar so bad. Because Skyrim. Anyway, he was Lee Harvey Oswald in Killing Kennedy, where Rob Lowe played Kennedy.
Oh my god, that's an it's an insult to somehow everyone involved.
Yeah. You know what? My anxiety is making me fact check that. I am 99% positive it was Rob Lowe, but we're putting this out to the public, so I need to be correct. Michael McGrady, who was Sheriff Bridges, was the cop in Hocus Pocus, who the trio goes up to tell him they lit the black candle and let the witches out, and his little sister goes, "He's a virgin." And like, she says it with all the confidence of somebody who probably doesn't know what that word means but know it's significant.
I didn't know what that meant at that age.
Killing Kennedy. Yeah, it was Rob Lowe.
Just so bizarre.
Wait, who was Jackie?
Choices were made.
Oh, it was Jennifer Goodwin, who I always want to call Jennifer Goodwin because she spells Jennifer with a G. Which is upsetting. Did you watch Once Upon a Time, that fairy tale show?
Mm-mm. I know. I know no one.
Aaron Paul was Jesse Pinkman in Breaking Bad, which I've never seen.
Ever heard of it?
Yeah, do you guys, I don't know if you guys have heard of that. Shanna Collins was Brandy Dreyfuss, who was the girl that Gideon, like, singles out to talk to. She was most recently Lily in Anastasia. Not the cartoon. It was a live-action Anastasia, and I don't know what the production company was, because I didn't look. It wasn't on IMDb, and I wasn't looking further than that. Chris Butler is my favorite character of the episode, Deputy Harris, who has just the most astounding accent.
Yeah, it was a thick accent. I mean, I guess, I think because DC is right there, I don't always consider Virginia the South, even though I know it is. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't know. Like, in my mind, I don't think of them as, like, Southern. Mm-hmm. But they're definitely from a more rural area.
Yeah.
So I guess it makes sense.
But no one else has an accent.
Yeah.
Just him.
It's true. Maybe he came from, like, West Virginia. Do they have accents there? I literally don't know. What's even in West Virginia?
Right. So, Chris Butler plays Deputy Harris. He's also Professor Hollis in the episode Corazon, which is the episode where we find out about Reed's headaches. in that episode, Professor Hollis is the unsub. We talk about how Haley's dead. I don't think we need to spoiler this show. So he's the unsub, the one who is like a college professor who's trying to like live up to his, or like trying to make his dad see him by, I think it was
exploiting Paolo, other people's cultures.
Yeah, I think it was Paolo that he was ritually killing people. Ellen Waglum, who was Cherish Hansen, was Heather Handler from the SVU episode where the girl pretends to be a family's long-lost daughter. So, you know, if you watch SVU as many times as we do, you might remember that episode. It's like the, she has like, so she looks different because she has brown hair in the SVU episode, but like she pretends that she's this girl, like she's like, it's me, your daughter. And then like the sister is kind of like skeptical. She's like, that's not my sister. And then they eventually find out that she's not her, but she came from like an equally traumatizing situation. Anyway.
What a totally normal thing to do.
Right? I think that's the one where she had like a tattoo, or like the sister had a tattoo that she didn't have or something like that. Like a four-leaf clover or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I have for our guest stars.
Yeah. So, not a bunch of noobs.
Mm-mm.
All right, so like I said, they're in Virginia. I think it's McAllister County. So the episode starts with a boy and girl running through the woods. The girl asks him how much further, and he asks if she wants to stop. She says no, but he very kindly acts like it's his idea to just let's rest a little bit. And so they slow down to a walk. She apologizes and said she didn't want to slow him down and encourages him to keep running, saying, you know, she'll catch up, she'll see him after, whatever. So he gives her a kiss and jokes, you're out of shape, cheerleader, and then continues on his run. She sits down on a tree to tie her shoe and just kind of rest. And she starts hearing all these different noises.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sticks breaking, leaves rustling, just maybe even some animals.
Mm-hmm.
She calls out, hello, is somebody there? A crow caws. Classic. She thinks Adam, is her boyfriend, the boy she was running with, is trying to scare her. And so she calls out to him, but she quickly realizes that's not the case. So she takes off running in her velour tracksuit. very of the time. She must have been so sweaty.
Can we talk about how far she ran before she found Adam? How did he get that far that fast?
Yeah, I don't know. A lot happened in a short amount of time.
She just kept running.
Yeah, so she runs and she runs and she's running through the woods, and it looks like she almost kind of comes out of like a more heavily wooded area onto like a trail, like
mm-hmm.
not like a paved trail or anything, but at least like a worn area. And there she comes across Adam, and he's laying unconscious on the ground. She runs over to him and realizes he's bleeding from a head wound. We then see someone approach her, and she yells no, and then it cuts to the next scene, which is the medical examiners taking Adam's body away on a stretcher. One sheriff's deputy says, the victim's the Lloyd boy, isn't it? The quarterback? So we find out it's Adam Lloyd, who is the quarterback on the high school football team. I thought they were in college. They looked like they were in college, but yeah, but, you know, Hollywood. They then call the sheriff over to look at something else on the ground, and it's the skeletal remains of another body. So the deputy points out that the head is cracked open just like Adam's was. So they go to get more crime scene techs, and the sheriff moves a branch and says, we're going to need a lot more than the crime scene folks. But you don't really see what he sees yet. So then we're back at the BAU. And Reed is putting 6.5 pounds of sugar in his coffee.
Did you see that he labeled his cup with his name?
No, that's
like,
so cute.
Like with a literally with a label maker, it says Spencer Reed on the cup.
Okay, he doesn't want people to touch his cup.
Yeah.
Morgan calls him out for all the sugar. It's like one of those diner sugar things, mm-hmm. you know, where like the flap just like flies open. Mm-hmm. So Morgan asks if he had a late night, and Reed says very, and Morgan says, my man. Just, like, are you serious?
Yeah.
And Reed says, not that kind of late night. So Morgan asks, you know, what keeps a boy genius awake at night, and kind of teases him about like the mysteries of the universe and all the smart stuff that would keep him awake. But then Reed asks Morgan seriously if he ever has nightmares. Morgan asks if that's what's keeping him up, and Reed said he's lately been having them every night, and it's about their job. So Morgan suggests that he talk to Gideon about it. And then Elle walks up and says Hotch wants everyone in the round table room. So JJ gives the rundown of, you know, the two that were, well, actually at this point, the Adam. They only know about Adam. They mm-hmm. don't know about the girl.
Mm-hmm.
So she gives a rundown that Adam was killed, which is found another
kind
body.
Kind of weird that they picked up a single homicide case. Oh, right, because they found the, yeah. No, never mind.
Yeah. And so Elle asks how the two bodies, Adam and the skeletal body, how they're connected, and how they're found feet from each other and had identical head wounds. He then tells them there's some evidence at the scene that could cause a bit of an uproar, and Gideon clarifies that it's satanic cult.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, paraphernalia. What's the word?
Paraphernalia. There? No, I like that.
Decor. like trying to find the word.
Yeah.
So we get the opening sequence, and Gideon's opening quote is, Sir Peter, should have re-listened to this, Sir Peter Ustinov
mm-hmm.
said, unfortunately, a superabundance of dreams is paid for by a growing potential for nightmares.
Hmm, tell me about it, stud. I have so many dreams that turn into nightmares, and my dreams are so vivid, it's bananas.
Yeah, I can't take melatonin because it turns into like Nightmare City, and they're so vivid, and then I just sleep worse.
I wake up from dreams and I'm like, how did my mind come up with that? Like, what is going on in my mind that, like, I can envision this scenario? In there? I don't think I am. I really don't.
we're on the plane. And Hotch asks JJ to keep the information out of the press as long as possible. And Elle asks why that's important. And Reed tells her about the satanic panic of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And Elle asks if there's no such thing as devil worshipping. Or she asks if there's no such thing as devil worshipping, excuse me. And Gideon says no, not at all. He said there's never been a proven case of a satanic ritual killing in the United States. It's usually juveniles causing property destruction and desecrating churches.
Yeah, so there is devil worshipping. It's just not usually homicidal.
Right, and our dude, Zizzo, gives us the rundown. So, we
speech.
Cut to this. I know. so good. So we get to the scene, and we see that there's a tree with Satan Loves LOD carved into it.
It doesn't say loves, it says lives. I thought it said loves too, and I was
Satan
like,
lives?
Yeah, Satan lives, and then it's signed LOD.
Oh!
Yeah! I thought they were
And you know what? Yeah, I went back to that like 8 times because I kept thinking it said Satan loves God, and I'm like, what does this possibly mean? And then after like a million times and a little more context, I was like, oh right, LOD. I can't really, oh my god, wow, Satan lives, signed LOD.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture right now because you know me and my anxiety. Yeah, it says Satan lives and then LOD underneath. But I thought it said Satan loves LOD too. And I was like, how do you know Satan loves you?
It's awfully presumptuous of you. Wow. That makes way more sense. Great. You learn something new every day. So the team meets with the sheriff and he tells him that the skeleton hell has, well, tripping over my words. The skeleton has melted wax in its chest cavity. So Reed gives the history of birthday candles.
After he correctly identifies that the skeleton is a male, even though we don't know that he's ever taken, like, one of his majors is not anthropology. So.
He's like, the pelvis is this shaped and blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Great. So Morgan asked if the kid was out running today and was he a random victim or a target. And Hotch said it seems like it's a blitz attack on a high-risk victim who's capable of defending himself. And he used a rock found at the scene, which Elle points out makes him disorganized. And Morgan points out that the Manson cult murders were highly disorganized, too. Just drawing the comparison between, you know, that cult
Can
vibe.
We just, for a minute, think about how big that rock was and what our unsub looks like?
That's such a good point. It would be hard to raise over your head, like, yeah. Especially considering how much bigger Adam.
Yeah, Adam
is than
yeah.
the unsub.
The unsub looks 5'6".
Yeah,
on a good day.
Yeah, yeah, with his like loafers with a little bit of a heel on them.
Like, that's a heavy fucking rock for you to be lifting over your head like that.
Yeah. Like, it's hard to surprise someone when you can't move very fast. Like, there's no way to be able to move quickly with that big of a rock, even if you were strong.
And then he was hit on, I think, because he was laying, and his head was tilted upwards.
It was upwards. Kind of like the front of his head, wasn't it?
It was the right side of his head. So how do you approach someone on their right and sneak attack them with a rock?
Right.
Maybe he was like bending down to catch his breath.
Yeah,
but it looked
shoe.
Like front impact. Like it looked like that yeah. rock hit him on the forehead. I think we're getting a little too deep for 2005.
Too in the weeds.
Criminal Minds.
Yeah. Fair enough.
But hey, these are the questions that you guys asked too, and that's what we're here for.
So, Elle points out that it's a pretty heavily traveled trail and asks, if you were going to commit a ritual killing, would you do it in the middle of a high traffic area? Hotch said maybe they'd drag the body to the other scene where the other body was found. And Elle asked, well, why didn't they? So, this is just a lot of, like, thinking out loud at this point. Gideon asks what LOD means, and Reed said there's nothing of significance in Satanism that he could think of that would lend itself to that acronym.
Is this when they were walking up the hill?
Yeah.
Did you see Gideon tripped?
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think that was on purpose. And then they had to help each other up the fucking hill. Like, which producer was like, walk up that hill, you bitch? Like, yeah, you no, didn't have
this
to come
not the
out
job
that
I
way.
Signed up for. Yeah. Give me a four-wheeler, please. So, JJ said she's going to have Garcia look into LOD. Gideon asked the sheriff if there's any cult in the area he knows about. And I love this part because Reed read my mind. The sheriff said, if there is a secret group around here, I'd know about it. And Reed was like, what? Then it wouldn't be a secret group. That's literally the complete opposite of a secret group. If there's a secret group, you wouldn't know about it. And I was like, yes. That's, yes. Exactly. The sheriff said people around there just are looking for a quiet place to raise kids, and none of them are capable of doing something like this. Gideon tells Hotch it does seem like it's a ritual site. Sorry, again, my dog's chewing a bone. So then a woman comes running onto the scene. She asks if Adam Lloyd was killed there this morning, and then she says that her daughter was out there with him on his run, and she can't find her. She said, Cherish is missing. So that is the name of the girl, and as we know, they did not find her body at the scene. So Gideon said they're looking for someone who managed to kill Adam and grab the girl off a busy path, which Reed said fits the cult theory because it would likely take more than one person. But Hotch said it's possible if they killed Adam quickly and grabbed the girl while she was in shock. And to be fair, I guess, they were separated at the time. It's not like they were together. Elle said the country is rock.
I couldn't tell you what you were trying to say there. Maybe like rocky terrain.
Yeah, and it's easy to get lost.
The country is rock.
I don't don't know what that was supposed to be. And Morgan said the unsub is must be local to be able to navigate the trails. And just to even know that those trails are, you know, mm-hmm. there. So Gideon said to tell the sheriff he wants locals to work on the search party for Cherish, but not to tell the sheriff why, or else he might call the whole thing off. So their plan is to profile the locals who come to help. JJ approaches the sheriff, tells them that they should use locals, and he says he doesn't want them ruining the crime scene or getting lost, but JJ kind of explains how the search will work in grids and convinces them they'll be fine, and the sheriff agrees. So they head back into town to organize.
So one of my favorite quotes from this episode is, "Your people can look better than any statey." Who calls state cops stateys? Like, she said it as if that was, like, a small town thing.
I've heard it before.
No.
Yeah, because I maybe it's a...
Is it a New England thing?
I say maybe it's like a Northeast thing. It is some people don't use it all the time. Like, most people say state police. That's a lie. Most people just say troopers.
Yeah.
But I've heard it. Like, it's not unheard of, but it's not like most people don't say stateies.
Well, I guess they say CHP out here, Chips. But, like, in Kansas, it was troopers.
Yeah, state troopers.
Trooper Ben. He's from Kansas. He's, like, from the town that I lived in.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, close. But, yeah, statey really threw me through a loop. Is that how that...
Threw me for a loop.
Threw me, yeah, okay.
Yeah. There we go.
And then I wrote down nothing like a good old small town phone tree, because when he said he was going to make some calls, I was like, I know exactly what's about to happen. And you're going to, yeah. like, I...
You call Bob, Peg, and Jim, mm-hmm. and then they'll call.
Mm-hmm. Like, we had, I remember our church phone tree, and then we had a school phone tree, and a Girl Scouts phone tree. And a swim team phone tree.
Everyone's responsible for X, Y, and Z. That's
yeah. And then it was like, in a, the way they would put them, like the way they would print them was like a family tree, basically. Mm-hmm. And they'd be like, okay, you're responsible for this person. So if you get a call, you got to call this person. And that's like how we would find out if a swim meet was canceled.
Hey, it works.
Yeah.
If it's small enough.
Mm-hmm. It was a town of 3,000 people. So oh my it's God. Pretty small.
God. So the sheriff introduces JJ and Reed. They head into town and to a reverend outside of the sheriff's department. The sheriff invites him to get the congregation to help with the search party. And then we see the reverend do something, like, just kind of be sketchy. But, mm-hmm. you know, they're just trying to make everyone look sketchy. So they head inside and Reed meets a kid in a Letterman jacket. His name is Corey Bridges. They talk Nietzsche and some other nerdy stuff that was too much for me to type and whatever. So we find out he's the sheriff's son. So Reed explains he's there from the FBI and he's part of the BAU, and the kid tells him how cool that is before asking why the FBI would be in town. So Reed tells him there's a murder out on the mountain and that another girl is missing. The sheriff comes out and tells his son it's Cherish that's missing. The son said, "Cherish Hansen?" And I don't, he didn't really have an accent.
He had like a thing.
Yeah. So the sheriff tells him to get the rest of the team together for the search party. So it's safe to assume he's also on the football team as well as Adam.
What can tell you that? The Letterman was it jacket the super or the cool football jacket he's holding? No, I think Reed was holding the football. Yeah.
Yeah.
He, like, picked up the football, which is, like, you don't touch those things. Like, no. If you see a football hand, like in a trophy position, you generally don't pick them up.
Nerds don't know those. Freaking nerds.
Oh, my God.
So then, where are we? Okay, so then we're cutting back to the woods, and it shows the volunteer signing with JJ. The jocks and the cheerleaders show up, plus a bunch of other townies. The team watches the locals who show up. There's a very nervous looking girl who catches Gideon's attention. She's kind of lingering, but they don't speak. JJ said she's going to fax the list of volunteers to Garcia so she can start doing background checks. And Gideon said, good, he won't be able to resist inserting himself into a scene like this. He's here with us. So then we see Garcia, and she's giving a little background, said the area is very wealthy. She tells JJ the Reverend had been in prison for embezzlement, which is when he was became a born-again Christian. Garcia said there's a lot of tax sheltering in people's backgrounds, stuff like that, but nothing, you know, violent that stands out. She said there is one guy with a ton of debt, a shoddy work history, and a criminal record that includes assault charges, and his name is Henry Dent. So they find out he's in the grid with L.
I love whenever it's L, they always go, L. Like,
they're like, the lady.
Like, what was the other time? Oh, I think when she was on the train, L. And, like, every time they say her name, oh, when she went to the bomber's house and Hotch was writing down David Walker's name, he goes, L. Like, they say it like that so many times. It's
hilarious. They really do. So we see Elle and Henry out in the woods. Henry's kind of like weirdly watching Elle and mm-hmm. not doing much searching.
Mm-hmm.
So Elle bends down to tie her shoe and Henry approaches her, scares the shit out of her. But he's just checking on her, making sure she was okay because he saw her stop and she was like, yeah, just tie my boot. And
she's so fucking mean to this guy.
She was clearly like, this is weird. She treated him exactly the way I treat guys who talk to me on the street.
Okay, yeah. No, I. Yeah. She had every right to respond the way she did, but for a character, they didn't portray it as her being weirded out by the fact that he was talking to her.
Yeah, she was just.
They just like, portrayed her as being rude. Bitchy. Yeah.
Yeah. So he introduces himself to her, and he seems kind of off, but also maybe less creepy and almost, like, developmentally...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, maybe he is a little bit...
Like, if he lived in a bigger town, they would have diagnosed him with something when he was younger. Like, very... Yeah. Not anything severe, but, like, a lot of people in small towns, they just kind of write off any... sort of diagnosis is, oh, he's just a little slow or something like that.
Yeah.
So he's not like when he says he had a true whole life, like when she says
yeah.
My name's L, well, he's like the letter?
Right. Like it doesn't click that mm-hmm. L is just a name, and then she says, yep, had it my whole life, and he kinda, you know, laughs. So yeah, he doesn't really like they kind of at first paint him as menacing, but then once he starts talking, he seems pretty harmless.
Mm-hmm.
But then he starts asking about her job in maybe a little too much detail. So then Elle finds a note on a tree that says, Satan commands the virgin be sacrificed at the next full moon. And Henry says, that's tonight, isn't it? Who knows that? Who knows right. when the next full moon
Garcia.
Is? So then Henry goes to touch the note and says, what's yeah, right. that? Elle's like, it's blood.
But like, okay. How does she know it's blood? It could be red dye.
It could be, yeah, it could be a marker. It could be ketchup.
Yeah,
it could
exactly.
Be whatever.
Like she's like, that's blood.
Paint. Yeah.
Like I Maybe. Get it for dramatic effect, but it also did not look like blood.
No, it was way too bright.
Mm-hmm.
So then we're back at the sheriff's office. Reed yawns. Hotch asks if he's tired. Reed says he's fine. Hotch says, we all get them sometimes. And Reed says, get what? And Hotch says, nightmares. So then Reed looks over at Morgan and then tells Hotch it's not that bad. Hotch said, if he wants to talk about it, you know where to find me. So then Hotch gives the profile. He tells them there's never been a proven case of satanic ritual killing. They've never... been a verified human sacrifice, so there have been animal sacrifices and vandalism in the name of Satan. Morgan said it's not impossible that there are cults who kill. Sorry, I thought I was gonna burp. And Reed references the Manson family and Jim Jones. Elle said cults are generally led by charismatic megalomaniacs, And Reed says that's who they're looking for. He'll be memorable and someone who will stand out as weird, strange, and scary. Hotch said it could be teenagers and maybe they like heavy metal music.
So
he's definitely local.
At one of these points, we scan across the room and see that Corey's getting the profile for some reason.
Yeah.
The teenage son of the sheriff is just sitting there getting the profile with all the other agents and detectives and police officers.
Like, guess he's part of the team now. So the sheriff said, "You really think someone local is doing this?" And Hotch said, "I'm sure of it." And the sheriff said, "I think I'd know if someone here is capable of," and then his son cuts him off. And I wrote over here, "Why is he there, LOL?" and says, "Dad, I know someone like that. His name is Mike Zizzo, and he graduated about 5 years ago, but he still hangs out with high school kids. They all get high and listen to heavy metal together and call themselves Lords of Destruction."
I know, LOD. Like, 8 Zizzos.
I know some Zizzos. So his dad's like, "How do you know this?" And he tells him he's been there when they hang out, and he said, Zizzo talks about Satan all the time, and they hang out in the old Jensen house, I think they were saying, on the other side of the mountain. Sheriff said that's out of his jurisdiction, and Hotch said, "Not ours." I wrote, "Not ours, baby, let's go," but I think he's probably not ours. I like that the sheriff was like, "It's out of our jurisdiction," then they go anyway.
Yeah, right. And when Corey talks about going to the party, his dad looks so mad over, like, absolutely nothing. Like,
yeah, he goes to a house where there's people,
right? He was so mad for no reason. Yeah. He's like, "We'll talk about this when we get back."
Well, you're going to have a lot more to talk about.
That's what I was thinking.
So they leave the sheriff's office to go to the Jensen house. And when they're outside, Gideon sees that nervous girl from the search party there, kind of lurking. So Gideon stays back from the raid and goes to talk to her. So then we're at the house where there's a bunch of Satan stuff and heavy metal music. Mm-hmm. And we see it says Lords of Destruction on the walls and the house and LODs everywhere, whatever. That's such a, like, boring cliche.
Right.
Like, the heavy metal music, whatever, stupid. It's true, Marilyn Manson is evil, but...
Yeah, no, absolutely.
That's unrelated. So then it cuts to a church, and we see Gideon walking up the center aisle of the church, and he sits down in the front pew next to her. She says, "Do you believe in God?" He says, "Yes." And she said, "How about the devil?" So then it cuts to the interrogation with Mike Zizzo. They show him the note from the tree, and Zizzo laughs. They ask him... Mike Zizzo is the real hero of the story.
Yeah. Go ahead, say it. Go ahead, say it.
They say, "You think someone threatening this girl is funny?" He said, "No, I think them saying Cherish is a virgin is funny." I was like, "Oh, poor Cherish."
Did you see when he was, like, in the interview, he did that scary, sexy jaw clench? Like, when guys, like, clench their jaw and it's supposed to be, like, scary, but it's kind of, like, kind of hot.
Didn't notice.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah, that thing. Oh, my God. Hot.
Yeah. I'll should go back and watch it. Oh, my God. So then Zizzo just schools them on Satanism and how it's, an opposition to religion, which is pretty accurate. He says they're basically just aggressively atheist.
I mean, like, he's a perfectly fine dude. Just stop hanging out with kids.
Yeah, that's weird. But for real, if you don't know about Satanism, it's kind of sick.
The Church of Satan is, the Satanic Church is, like, suing Texas.
Yeah, it's a human rights organization, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. Love that. What do you have in your mouth?
That's fine. We're talking to me. I was like, my time.
I saw him run by me with something hanging out of his mouth.
Oh, my chihuahua does that all the time.
Oh my god. Is that why he's a fucking kleptomaniac?
She'll hold something loosely in her mouth and walk away, like, trying not to seem suspicious.
You just suspicious.
Hold her head down.
Yeah, he'll take something he knows he's not supposed to have, and, like, I won't know he has it, and then he'll start whining, because he'll be like, I have this thing I'm not supposed to have, and you should be yelling at me.
My dog will hide with something she knows she's not supposed to have, and, like, the way she walks in front of me when she knows she's not supposed to have something that's in her mouth is just, like, so don't be suspicious. Like,
yeah. That's what I always tell my mom. Like, I can tell when he has something because I can tell by the way his paws are tapping on the ground. There's, like, more glee in his step where he's just like, I have something. Like,
she always, like, puts her head down and walks as fast as possible without running.
Just avoiding eye contact. Away.
Yes, literally that.
Oh, that's so funny. All right, where was I?
Zizzo's interrogation.
Yes, so he says they're basically just aggressively atheist, and Nell said, how aggressive, Mike, and shows him some crime scene photos. And then it cuts back to the church, and Girl said, you're one of the FBI agents, right? And Gideon said, you know, yeah, what's up? And the girl asks him if he thinks God is vengeful and if he punishes us. And Gideon says he doesn't know, and tells her he read papers from religious scholars after Hurricane Katrina saying the U.S. was being punished for its immortality.
Immorality.
I'm like, that doesn't sound right. For its immorality. But another priest from New Orleans said he thought the storm was proof of God's love because the levees didn't break until the storm was over instead of during it. So that saved thousands of lives. So Gideon says, I guess the answer depends on whether you think you have something to be punished for. And the girl tells him her friend Cherish is missing and it's her fault. So we cut back to the agents. Oh, okay. We're cutting to the agents. I'm just going to trust myself here. Just keep reading.
I think probably Morgan and Reed.
Yes. So Reed confronts Morgan about telling Hotch about his nightmares. And Morgan said Hotch and Gideon need to know. I don't really know if that's true, but Reed is pissed. Morgan tells Reed his nightmare started 6 months after he started at the BAU. They were working a strangler case in Montana, and he said as he was looking over the body of the next victim, her eyes were wide open, and it felt like she was looking straight at him. He had said, like, he knew exactly what they needed to solve the case, and that was another victim, and then there she was. Mm-hmm. And night after night, he'd fall asleep and see her eyes. He said Gideon somehow just knew and sat him down and talked him through it. Morgan said he still has nightmares, but not nearly as often. And when they come back, he knows how to handle them. So then a car pulls up. Oh, so they're out in the woods at this point.
Yeah, they're at Zizzo's. They're at the house where Zizzo holds all of his, like, hangouts.
Yep. It's
his,
like,
parties.
This. Yeah, there's, like, a pretty big wooded property. Mm-hmm. And so then a car pulls up, and it is Corey Bridges, the sheriff's son. He asked if they found Cherish and if Zizzo said anything, and they said no, but he was like, he had this real frantic energy about him.
Mm-hmm.
And he asks if they checked the outbuilding, and they didn't know what he was talking about, so he leads them
such
to
a
it
fucking idiot.
Oh my god, textbook. Textbook, she says, with a journalism degree. Oh. Like, I fucking know what I'm talking about.
We do, because so then... we study at the school of this show.
Literally. I think I'm an expert. So then it cuts back to Gideon and the girl in the church, and she tells him that the skeleton under the tree was a tourist or something. It's been a long day.
Same word.
Who fell off the trail and cracked his head, and the whole group went to the body regularly and watched it decompose. The actual fuck. Why would you do such a thing?
That's so fucking disgusting. Because it's, like, not like it's just decomposing. Things are eating it. Like, bugs are, like, eating its flesh.
A body decomposing is not a nice thing.
And it smells.
It smells terrible. How was it not discovered on an active trail? I don't know. Disgusting. And then we cut back and we see Zizzo, and he's looking at the Satan lives, L-O-D, pick, not Satan loves. And he says, what is this? And they're like, you tell us. And he says he's never seen it before. So we're back at the church. You're going to get whiplash. Buckle up.
Yeah, always with the show.
I know. So in the church, the girl's telling Gideon they were just curious, and it became like their thing that they had that their parents didn't know about. And Gideon's like, this was a human being. And she said, I told you we're being punished. So now we're back to Morgan, Reed, and the sheriff's son, Corey. So they get to the outbuilding, and they see that there is a pentagram and LOD on the door. So the sheriff's son's like, I can't believe this is happening. This kind of stuff doesn't happen in McAllister. And Reed's like, you've read the books? Yes, it does. Happens everywhere. Morgan goes into the outbuilding and finds Cherish's body. Her eyes are open and looking at him, just like his dream. Mm-hmm. And she's got blood on her head. She's obviously super pale. She's dead.
Super dead.
Sheriff's kid. Oh, I don't know why I keep calling him that. Corey.
Because he looks like a 5-year-old.
Yeah, he looks very small.
He's the only one who was cast that actually looks like a teenager.
Mm-hmm. Corey asks, is she in there? And is she all right? And Morgan is just like, she's in there. So back to Zizzo, he says they get drunk and listen to metal. They don't kill people, which, like, yeah. He said police are looking to blame someone who doesn't conform to the norm. Then Gideon
comes
in
so bad.
Gets everyone. Yeah, it's not a great look.
So bad.
So then Morgan sends Reed off to get backup, and Corey is like, I can't believe it. I saw her just the other day at the pep rally. And then Gideon, so we're kind of like cutting quickly back and forth between scenes. Mm-hmm. And Gideon is telling the sheriff what the girl told him about the church, about the skeleton. He said they all knew about the skeleton. They were watching it decompose. Zizzo and LOD are the only ones who didn't know it was there. But she also had told Gideon that the pentagram and candles weren't there a few months ago. So then we're back, and Corey is telling Morgan that he wants to be like one of them someday. And then we're back again, and Gideon says, who told us all about Zizzo and LOD? And Sheriff was like, Corey? And they ask where he is, and the sheriff said he went to the Jensen house to see if they found anything. Why are you letting your son do this? He's not a fucking police officer.
No, he's not.
He's a child.
So this is when the deputy walks in and says my favorite line of the entire episode. He asks the sheriff if he opened the gun locker, and the sheriff's like, no. And then he goes, someone did. There's a revolver missing.
It was like you were reading from my notes. Those are my next two sentences. But like, you did it with an accent, so it's better.
He sounds like such an old-timey prospector. Like,
yes,
someone did. There's
very
a revolver
old-timey
missing.
So,
I say it with him every time I watch this episode. It's just so dramatic.
Yeah, it's really setting the scene here. They don't want any mental gymnastics that need to be done. They want to spell it right out.
Yeah.
So then we cut back to the woods, and now we're like, uh-oh, Morgan's in trouble. And Morgan is explaining how profiling works, and that in this case, they're looking for an unsub who's disorganized, but is smart and can make the crime scene look like someone else. He said they might be looking for someone who inserted himself into the crime scene to control it, basically just calling him out for leading them to the body. Corey's like, oh, you mean me? It was a lucky guess, but Morgan keeps going. And then Reed comes back, and Corey immediately grabs him and holds him hostage. He's got a gun. The revolver. he says she wasn't... Corey says she wasn't supposed to be there. That was his run every day, not hers. So Corey tells Morgan to put the gun down, and he does. Reed starts spewing some quotes. I don't know. He's trying to nerd his way out of it. Morgan said he's just a horny kid who's trying to get rid of the cheerleader's boyfriend. And then Morgan is able to tackle him and take him down. A gun fires, but no one appears to be hit.
Sorry. We kind of glanced over the part where Corey went, "Make no mistake, I will shoot your boy."
Yeah.
That's a microaggression. Yeah. That is a fucking microaggression.
It actually, yeah. Yeah. Oh my god. So that's pretty much it of the case, not the episode. And then Gideon. Okay,
sorry. he did not have to kill Cherish.
No.
She would not have seen him had he just walked away from the crime scene.
Yeah.
Like, there's you could no have reason. Painted that as him just falling down. If you,
yeah,
I guess the rock was there. He could have fallen on the rock. Like, who's gonna think that you're gonna lift that rock over your head, you tiny puny little thing? Like, was he the kicker? What is he doing in football?
Bench warmer. Water boy.
The boy was stick thin.
Like, yeah, he was very small. He evoked soccer player, not football player.
Or tennis.
I was just gonna say that.
Yeah. The town I grew up in was a huge tennis town. And that's where all the short boys went.
I went through a phase where I wanted to learn how to play tennis, and then I was terrible at it and it wasn't fun, so
I played tennis my 7th grade year, and I only won when we played one specific team. Otherwise, I think I won a few times in doubles. But, yeah, no, I was not good.
But you weren't the worst.
I was not the worst. I beat at least one person every year. Well, not every year. Sorry. I only did tennis for a single, like, my 7th grade. I did track and field my 8th grade year. Not to be confused with me actually doing track. I was a shot put bitch and discus. Oh. We did weight training instead of running, and that's why I did it.
I did track my 8th grade year too, because soccer was a fall sport. So I was like, track is a spring sport. Oh my god, they made my ass run hurdles. I am 5'1". Why am I running hurdles? It was exhausting. They're like, well, you're a dancer, so you can jump. I'm like, I'm 5'1". How many times trying to tell you that? I haven't grown since I'm 12. Wow, that is.
We had football. So, the fall sports were volleyball and football. The winter sports were basketball for each. Or, tennis was also a fall sport. Tennis was fall and spring, I think.
I think tennis was spring for us.
And then, or maybe it was, I think it was, I don't remember. High school's a blur, it was a bad time. And then, spring sports were baseball, softball, track and field. And I was a year-round sports star until my depression hit sophomore year.
Ah, that bitch.
Right? She really came in fucking swinging. Like, first I dropped out of volleyball, and then I was like, you know what? Don't really want to play basketball either. And then I was like, and then I stopped sleeping, and I was like, I think I might be depressed. And lo and behold.
Man. I remember that happened to me when I was older. I was 23 or 24. And I also, I like couldn't get out of bed ever. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't do it. I would just lay in the dark all day. And then all of a sudden I was like, I think I might have depression.
Right.
It's like, all of a sudden it clicked, because I was always like, no, I have anxiety. And then I'm like, oh, maybe I have both. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because I haven't left my bedroom in 3 days.
I was diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder when I was 10 because I had extreme separation anxiety from my mom. I was in daycare for a very long time. I did not stay at home by myself at all. And I didn't go to a sleepover. I went to sleepovers when I lived in California I lived in California from when I was 3 till I was 7, and I went to sleepovers then, but when we moved back to Kansas, I did not stay over at anyone's house from the time I was 8 until I was 13.
I had a friend like that who, she would always, like, she was in with our group sleepovers, and then always at, like, 11:30, midnight, she'd be like, can I go home? In her, like, little voice, and we'd have to bring her home.
There was
which was fine.
The very first sleepover I went to was after a pool party for our summer softball team, and it was on a farm in the middle of nowhere. And I was like, yeah, this is fine for my first sleepover. But I also, my biggest thing with sleepovers is that I wasn't raised with a father, and so dad scared me. I was genuinely terrified of anyone who had a dad. I was like, what the fuck is that? What is that?
That makes sense to me, though. Like, I had a dad growing up, and I didn't, my mom talks about how when we moved to my hometown, I wasn't born there. We moved there, I was like 3. She's like, you wouldn't go near men. You hated them. You would not go, except for my neighbor, Mr. Williams. Shout out to Mr. Williams. He's a very soft, gentle man. But, like, I was afraid of men, and I had a dad, a normal dad. He was a little hot-headed, but, like, he was there.
My grandpa. Yeah. Yeah. Only, like, man in my life. And, like, my uncles were fine, even though I hadn't really, my ears are ringing, what the hell. Even though I hadn't really, like, known them when I was that young. But anyone who had a dad, I was like, I can't stay at your house. You have a dad. What the hell? I don't know what that is. That's scary to me. There's a man in your house. Do you know? Did you guys honestly know there's a fucking man in this house?
It sounds like you just had good instincts.
But yeah, the first time I spent the night there, I think she had a dad, but he just, like, wasn't home. And so mm-hmm. I was like, this is fine. This is a mom house.
Yeah, perfect. Mm-hmm. I get it.
But that was an offshoot of the story about my anxiety.
Yeah, where did this start?
Right? But I was diagnosed with depression when I was 14 after I stopped sleeping and dropped out of every sport except for softball. And then I didn't get my next diagnosis until I was 22. I lived from age 14 to age 22 with the diagnoses of anxiety and depression. Then I moved to California, like, sweetie, you have bipolar 2 and ADHD. And I was like, oh my god, that makes so much more sense. Like, it's crazy how much your life changes when you're on the right medication.
Yeah. My god, I can imagine. Like, I only have been diagnosed with anxiety and depression. And even just, like, I had gotten off my anxiety medicine because I didn't like the side effects it was giving me. And my doctor and I were like, well, you know, my life's a lot different now than it was when I first started taking them. I want to see, like, let's see if I can go without them. I can't go without them. I learned that the very hard way. Oh my god, it was so bad. Like, so bad. Yeah. And so, like, I was finally able, I, like, literally called my doctor in tears and was like, please, like, my doctor's office was like, I need to talk to my doctors, last April 2020, so I couldn't go in. And sense. So they're like, she'll call you back, and she called me, she was so sweet, she called me at, like, 7:30 p.m., and I had lost my health insurance because I had been laid off because of the pandemic, so she didn't charge me. She just sent me a prescription, like the angel
that's
that
so
she is.
Nice.
Thanks, Dr. Addo, you really saved me.
My dog is barking for the first time this episode. That is really, really sweet.
Yeah, that was so nice. Oh my god.
I remember coming out of my last, I had a very deep depression. Maybe late 2019, early 2020, or maybe it was it was early 2020. I had, like, 3-month period where I just did not leave my room because I wasn't working, I wasn't in school yet, and I was sitting there and I was playing a video game on my phone, playing a video game on my iPad, listening to a podcast, and I was like, you know what, I might have ADHD. So I made an appointment with my psychiatrist, and I told her how if I'm not doing 3 things at once, I get anxious. And she put me on Adderall, and I'm on Vyvanse now because the Adderall stopped working. But my life is so much easier, and I can definitely tell when I don't take them.
Oh my god. Well, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I hope everyone can get the medication they need. Kanye. Same.
It should, oh God, he makes me, as someone, I don't have bipolar 1, which is when you, so the difference between bipolar 1 and bipolar 2 is the scale at which you, like the, so there's like a scale of from depression to mania. So there's like depression, and then there's like cycling, and then there's normal, and then hypomania and mania. And people with bipolar 2 never get higher. Usually, I mean, obviously there's the odd case, but don't get higher than hypomania. And so hypomania for me is just cleaning.
Oh my God.
Becoming very productive. Like, one time when I became hypomanic, I deep cleaned my bathroom. Like, I found like a deep clean person on Instagram, and like I had bleach sitting in my sink. I wiped my toilet down from top to bottom. Like, I was in there scrub a dubbin. And then afterwards I was like, you know what? I think I might be hypomanic. But true mania is something that my aunt experiences, which when she wasn't on medication was very detrimental to the relationship with a lot of my family. And so in a group I'm in, I equated it to being biracial, because I was like, bipolar 2 is kind of like being biracial. Like, I understand some of what you're going through, but I will truly never understand your life. And so, like, that's how I would describe it. Obviously, I'm not a clinician, but that's my life. I don't know where I was going with this. I lost my train of thought completely.
I think it was a good sidebar. So if you feel like you might have symptoms of something,
yeah, definitely go see a doctor. I definitely recommend, if you can, a psychiatrist over a general practitioner, because GPs aren't as equipped to handle mental illnesses. They'll just kind of slap a anything drug on you and call it good. That being said, I am on Prozac.
Yeah, your girl started on Paxil, and when I was telling my therapist. No, when I was telling my new doctor that, she was, like, asking for my history when I moved here, and I was like, oh, I was on Paxil, and then I was on nothing, and it was horrific, mm-hmm. And now I'm on Lexapro. She was like, Paxil's not the choice I would have made.
when I first got on medication so I was hospitalized because a nurse practitioner put me on Effexor and Klonopin as a 15-year-old. Effexor and Klonopin as a 15-year-old.
Oh my God.
So the first time I took the Klonopin, I had to go lay down in the nurse's office because I was so tired, and they had to call my mom because they physically could not wake me up.
Oh my God.
They were like, we can't wake her up. You need to come get her.
Not like, we can't wake her up, we're gonna call 911. Just like,
no, come get her.
This is a mom problem now.
Yeah, this is out of the scope of, like, we didn't even really have a school nurse. We had, like, a secretary who took your temperature.
she had Band-Aids.
I was such a hypochondriac when I was in middle school that they used to turn the thermometer upside down when I took my temperature so I couldn't see what the number was.
Oh my God. That's funny. I get it. Health anxiety is real.
Right?
I'm convinced I have a brain tumor at least 4 times a year.
Oh my God. The amount of times that I think that I have a breast lump. Like, I went to the doctor last Friday for a breast lump that I was like, this is probably a pimple, but I haven't been to the doctor in a while, so I should probably just go.
I'm trying to get them to get me to start having mammograms because my mom had breast cancer when she was 45.
Sorry, my mom had to go to bed. She had to bring my chihuahua in. She's not a chihuahua. She's a I don't even know what to call her because she's a chihuahua schnauzer and she's eating, so we should probably wrap it up because she's She's a chihuahua, so her mouth isn't big enough for her to chew inside of her mouth. So she chews with her mouth open, like, with just the side of her teeth. So it's about to get real loud.
Love hearing dogs chew. I mean, it probably isn't so good for a podcast, but for my own enjoyment. Also, I only have 10% battery left, and my charger is in my office.
So. Okay. I don't even think we did the end quote. We really got off track at the end of this episode.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. So, Jason Gideon... I don't know why I said his whole name, because I wrote it. His final quote was, playwright Eugene Ionesco said, ideologies separate us, dreams and anguish bring us together, which ties in, he says that, and then there's the final scene, which is on the plane, and Gideon sits across from Reed and shows him a photo of his family. The woman in it was abducted when she was 13, and they were able to bring her home safely, and she still writes a letter to thank them every year. He said, we all have bad dreams, and he said they hunt the worst of humanity and see the depths of depravity. And Reed said, in his dream, there's a baby in a circle and someone on the other side, and he can't get to her, the baby. Gideon said to look at Deborah and remember the victims they have saved. He said they can't always beat the unsub to the babies, but the ones they save make the job bearable. So Gideon takes the photo out of his wall and hands it to Reed, and Reed immediately falls asleep. And that was it. It's over. And my dog is rummaging through his play box of bones.
Listen, so, guys, we have dogs.
There's going to be dog ambiance. It's just...
Yeah. Ambient dog noise, like if we had subtitles. Totally. My dog hasn't eaten in a while, because he's... pretty my I don't need to go through my dog's aggression issues right now, but
he's going through his own moment.
Yeah, he is. He's on Prozac because he has aggression issues, so it's very recent aggression issues, and it's only towards one dog in one room. But when he got put on Prozac, I was like, oh my god, twinsies. And his Xanax prescription is higher than human dose.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
It's they must not working!
Tabloids are different.
It's the exact same medication. Like, it's literally human. Like, they don't make dog Prozac. God. It's just Prozac.
So
I hide it in cheese.
Sorry.
Oh, he didn't get his pills today. Sorry.
Okay. I just got a low battery notification, so my one fun fact, and then we are good. So during the episode, Gideon claims that there's been no confirmed examples of ritual murder. That is no longer true as of 6 months after the episode aired, as Gerald Robinson was convicted of murder for the ritual killing of Margaret and Paul. Rest in peace, Margaret. Yeah, so that's all I have, and it's really all my computer has.
I'm going to try and do this real quick. If you would like to follow us, you can find us anywhere, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at This Is Calm Pod. If you'd like to email us, you can email us at thisiscalmpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. If you know anyone who's been on the show or worked on the show or any fun facts about the show, we would love to hear from you. And I think that's it. So we will see you guys next week with episode 11, Poison, and I think.
I was literally just looking it up.
We're so good at this.
Blood Hungry. Hotchner and his team attempt to get inside the mind of a psychotic killer whose fantasies lead him to murder and drink the blood of his victims. Oh, this is a good one. I'm so excited to
It's the one where, it's the one where, this is my something world.
Haunts me.
And then after she dies, he sings it for his grandma.
So
I'm sorry, I shouldn't be laughing. Okay.
Bye.